It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
All right, so you want funny? Well, you're going to get it because my guest is Paul Rodriguez, headlining at the A-Stars Comedy Show at the Ahern Luxury Boutique Hotel, Monday, September 16th at 8 p.m. And for ticket information, go to ahernhotel.com. For everything about Paul Rodriguez, you can follow him on Instagram. And Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Aaron. Thank you very much.
So much of your comedy is based on your ethnic background, which is Japanese. And I wondered how you were able to make that transition.
Well, you know, I think we talk about what we know. You know, when I first started out doing this, I was at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles watching the greats. I mean, for 6 months, I worked with Richard Pryor. I was his gopher. I drive him around. I was his runner. And he fired me and told me, you don't need to be driving my ass around. He goes, I talked to Mitzi. I'm going to make you a regular there. And I'll be forever grateful to him. But, you know, I would watch how he talked about his African-American-ish, you know, how he eventually stopped using the N-word and was trying to grow. And I asked him about that one time, and he said, that'll come with age, you know. He says, whatever it is that gets the attention, your public, he goes, they will grow with you and they'll transition into that. And I have tried. If I look at my latest work, it's basically the rantings of an older guy that I never expected to be like this. You know, I talk about how parts of my body fall asleep before I do. You know, and these are the things I'm trying to find. Comedy and minutia, you know. At the beginning of my career, I fell by the influences of, I thought I needed to use a lot of profanity and vulgarity. And I guess for the time it worked. And then I cringe as I see those things that I did. But, you know, you grow, you make mistakes here and there. And always you try to talk about things that are funny to you. You know, if you really believe that you have whatever it is, a gift or a curse of being funny, then what makes you laugh? You have to believe that it'll make those who are listening to you laugh, you know, and that's my only guideline, really.
You mentioned comedy and minutia, which is a step above Jerry Seinfeld, which was a comedy about nothing. So at least now.
Well, you know, I've known Jerry also. He has a genius for that. And that you can see by the reflection of his, you know, I've always thought that money and fame is a byproduct of doing something very well. And obviously Jerry has done this very well, you know. And you know, at first I was trying to find topics that would encompass a large amorphous audience, you know. And then you realize that that's really not where it is. Where it is that what people remember will be the ordinary things that they go through every day. Case in point is one of my favorite things is of Seinfeld, speaking of him, is how he wondered why Asian people were using sticks and not a fork. And his take on that, as you might know, because it's a very famous routine, is that, you know, you think that after pitching hay out there, the light would come on and they go, hey, you know, maybe a small little fork, you know, and you see, and those are the things that right away hit you and you go, man, you know, why didn't I think of that? That's the biggest compliment I can give any comic I seldom hear them because I don't want to subliminally become Carlos Mencia. You know, I just I just try to stay in my own lane. Right. But that's really the thing, you know. You don't have to over-explain things, you know. You're not Dennis Miller here. You're not trying to impress people how well-read you are. You're simply trying to share how you feel and what you find ironic, because basically all comedy is leading a horse to water and making them drink, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, when you decided to go down that road of comedy, was there one incident that pointed you in that direction before the, you know, you talked about going and working at the club on Sunset, but the Comedy Store, but
long before that.
Yeah. Even long before that. So what was it that triggered you to know that you wanted to pursue a life of comedy and acting? Don't forget the acting, because that's good too.
Yeah. Let me tell you, comedy, the person most responsible for this is a professor at Long Beach College. She's long retired now. Her name was Anita Cano. I give her credit all the time. I used to disrupt her class with comments. You know, she'd be talking about something and I would find something funny and the whole class would laugh and she would laugh. And eventually, you know, eventually she said, you know, that kind of attitude belongs in high school or in kindergarten. We're in college now, Mr. Rodriguez. So one day she asked me to stay after school. And I figured, you know, I was young and attractive and so she, was she. So I'm thinking, okay,
of course, yes.
nothing of the sort. She said, listen, I find myself really torn because I encourage your behavior. You make me laugh so much, but we're like a month behind, you know. I don't think it's fair to their students, but I do believe that I have a solution. She said, my husband is works for the company that's the accountants for the Comedy Store, the world famous Comedy Store. I really hadn't heard of them, you know. She says they have Amateur Night and Westwood, not the Hollywood one. And my husband and I, and I'll even get some people from the class, we'd like to take you over there. He goes, if you have the courage, you get up on stage, and if you're funny, it'll be great. And if you're not, would you please just shut up and let me teach? And that was the deal we made. And true to her word, she took me over there. I went on stage, and it was as if I found what I was meant to do. I didn't even go back to class. We stayed in touch. And that years later, let me tell you, years later, I was asked to do the commencement speech for Long Beach College, right?
Completing the show, wasn't it?
Yes. And after I did that, after the show, she says, I have to introduce you to this young man who's really funny, too. Maybe you could help him, introduce him, take him around. I said, sure. And she introduced me to Gabriel Iglesias, this young, pudgy kind of guy who started to do his voices and his noises for me. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said, you don't got to audition for me. If Anita Cano thinks you're funny, you're funny. So after that, I gave my number. I took him around, introduced him to the various clubs. And that's all I did for him. He did everything else, obviously. And look at that. You know, I told Anita Cano the last time I told her, I said, you're wasting your time being a teacher. You could be an agent. You got two of the biggest acts here. You'd be super rich. You know what Gable is making now? And she said she gets a lot of joy of that. She says she's an elderly lady now, and she gets a lot of joy. She says, I tell my friends while I'm playing bridge that I'm responsible for Paul Rodriguez and Fluffy, and they don't believe me. So could you please call them?
The most important question is, did you ever finish the class?
No. No, okay. I never finished that class. But, you know, I've always had she told me something also that I find kind of deep in a way. She, because I wanted to be an attorney, right? International attorney. So I was taking Spanish.
I think if you think about it, comedy and international law makes perfect sense.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So I figured I wanted to be proficient in Spanish, right? Let me see. We're not having an earthquake, people.
For those listening, it's not a problem. For those watching, Paul is shaking the camera a little bit.
That's right. Anyways, she told me something. She says, the world has far too many lawyers and not enough funny men. He says, please, be a funny guy. And this time professionally. And I've always thought of that. And I've always, because, you know, I have second misgivings sometimes. And I said, wow, I really wasted my life. I could have been, you know, I knew Cesar Chavez, the great the unionist, mm-hmm. since I could remember. I mean, I knew him well since I was about 12 or 9, 10, around there. You know, my father was one of the first in the union, and I had great affinity towards him. Later, when I had a talk show on Univision, he announced the grape strike on my show. So Cesar Chavez was not someone I knew casually. It's someone that was, I consider, family. And sure. I was always thinking about becoming his spear, you know, becoming his muscle, becoming a person versed in law and fight with him, you know. But that didn't happen. So I've always felt like I failed somehow. I failed my calling, if you will, you know. And then I look at other lawyers and I go, thank God I'm not a lawyer, because I don't know if I could be a good one, or not crooked, you know. But it's
your true nature, Paul, in the sense of what you're following. So you could have regrets, but at the same time, do you want a life of paperwork and aggravation and stress, or
an attractive secretaries and sexual harassment suits? No, it's too late. It's too late. I long since have passed that halfway in a lake. I've always used that metaphor. You know, you start swimming towards the other shore, and then you say to yourself, well, if I could make it here, I could always turn back, you know. But once you get to the middle of the lake, it's just as far to go forward as to go back. It's right. I've long since passed that margin. So I made this bed, and I'm going to lay on it till the wheels fall off, you know.
Or your third option would be in the middle of the lake, drown, which wouldn't help anybody, but
that could be a possibility, you know. Although I'm a floater, I think I would float, you know. But, it has given me this profession has given me so much, in the sense that I was able to take my folks out of poverty. I hear some people sometimes and I laugh, you know, they go, oh, I was poor, you know, we only had this, we only had that, you know. We were actually very, very dirt poor. I'm talking about working the fields, not having a home, going for years, just sleeping in a car, in a little camper that my dad had, you know. And I loved my mom so much. I said to myself, my prayer to God was always, just give me a modicum of success so that I could show the old lady the good things in life, you know, what it is to wear a nice dress, you know, what it is to go to a store and not worry about the price. What if they hop on a plane and take a real vacation? You know, these things I wanted to share with them. You know, I wanted to walk into a dealership and go, Dad, pick a color, pick a car. What do you want here?
Exactly.
And I did that. I did those two things, and I bought them a farm, and they passed away. But the last 10 years of their lives was very, very good. You know, more than they could have ever imagined. Although my father never really was happy with my profession. Deep down inside, he would tell my mom, well, I guess it's okay. I guess it's okay. You know? even though he always thought he was funnier, and he probably was.
Yeah, but you know, he may have been funnier, but you were bringing in big bucks. So, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
And now I understand your new career is combining comedy and skateboarding. Is that true?
You know, it just goes to show that I passed on this ignorance. My father didn't like my career choice. I didn't like my son's career choice. And boy, we were both proven wrong. My kid comes up to me one time and he goes, he must have been around 9 or 10. And he goes, Dad, I've had an epiphany. And I go, I just hope you were using protection. You know, I was trying to be funny. And he says, no. He goes, I found what I'm going to do in life. And he told me it was a skateboarder. And my heart sank, because if he was going to pick any sport, he should have been a golfer. I used to live on the 9th hole of the Annandale Golf Course, and I'd go out there and I'd whack balls so I wouldn't look like a complete idiot every time I had a charity or something like that to do. And my kid would come and do it. And in no time, he was hitting that ball 100 yards straight to the flag, so much that the pro at the Annandale Golf Course said, Mr. Rodriguez, he goes, how many lessons has your kid taken? He goes, I said, I don't take no lessons. You just hear, you know, whacking the ball. He goes, that is unbelievable. I've never seen a 10-year-old, he was around 8 or 7 at the time, mm-hmm. hit that ball that far, you know? And so he started giving him lessons. I bought him, I invested in buying some lefty golf clubs. So I'm already thinking, you know, El Tigre Woods, you know, I'm thinking El Tigre Rodriguez. And one day after summer school, he comes to me, he goes, I'm done with golf. This girl he had a crush on said, golf is for gays, you know. And after that, I couldn't get him to pick up the golf clubs. The more I pressed him on it, the less he would. So I gave up on it until that day when he comes with a skateboard. And at the time, I said, I never heard of skateboarding. I thought everybody could do that. Flip the thing and you know, I thought that was anybody could do that, you know. And, And apparently it wasn't, because he's made a lot of money and has been very, very successful. So go figure. Yeah. But I still think the world lost a great golfer.
Yeah. Unless he combines it and golfs on skateboard, you know, that might work. A whole new sport, you know,
create. You go a rolling hole in one, you know. I don't know. But I am proud of that boy. I
mean, you should be. Absolutely. Paul, do you remember the first time you performed in Las Vegas?
I do remember the first time, and that was not a pleasant memory. I opened for the Pointer Sisters, and it was a disaster. But only the first night. Second night, I figured it out, and I finished the run. I had 2 weeks with the Pointer Sisters, and the limited material I had was not going for their particular audience, you know, mostly African American, but I adjusted. You know, I grew up in Compton, so I knew what would work there. And of course, later I became good friends with them, and they introduced me to two other big black acts. And I opened. I wound up opening for many bands, like James Brown, you know, Diana Ross. You know, and it just opened a whole new career. I was just opening for a lot of big African-American acts. Yeah.
They could see your very first appearance, not about Las Vegas, but on The Tonight Show. It's on YouTube. And you were such a young guy at that time when you appeared. It was, you know, it's a kick to see you perform, or to be a guest and perform that early in your life.
And, you know, the thing about that is that my all-time hero, the influence, if I have any, was to the Freddie Prinze. I love Freddie Prinze. I remember hearing about his death while I was in the Air Force. I was stationed remote at a radar site in Keflavik, in Iceland. If you look at the map of Iceland, it has a little archipelago, and there's a last island, Hornafjörður. Last island, there's a big radar site where America, you know, we monitor a Russian bear, we call them, as they go. And they go to Cuba, you know, we would monitor them. And I remember hearing in the teletype that comedian Freddie Prinze had taken his own life, and I was devastated. I was crying. The first time I ever cried for someone I never met, but my hope was, sorry, folks, I have to shut the door. My hope was always to get out of the Air Force, go to Hollywood, find this guy, and I was positive we'd be the best of friends, and I would be his writer, his friend, and I'd take him all the way to the top, even further than he was, you know. And when I heard he had taken his own life, I felt like my career was over. You know, there was no reason to even pursue meeting this guy, you know.
So when you were in Iceland, it wasn't just you; there were other people working with you, correct?
Well, there was a probably about 60 or 70 men, mostly men, working on this radar site. Now, that's about as remote as you get, you know. And
but did you make them laugh while you were there?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. even when I was a part of an air crew briefly, you know, a C-130, we would carry supplies. But Military Airlift Command, they've been dissolved into something else. I don't know what their acronym is now. But basically, we would take supplies to embassies around the world. It was terrific. I got to see many, many countries.
I think you're the only comedian I know that had a security clearance.
Absolutely. I have the highest security clearance. I used to work the KL-7s. I'm sure they have something else. I can talk about it now. These encryption machines. And I was their guy. And between you and me, I wasn't all that good.
I'm not saying a word. I'm not telling anybody.
I did my time, and there was no conflict with the Russians. But you know, I managed to get in there. You know, how I got into the Air Force was another story. I was drafted. You know, I was drafted, and 6 months later, Nixon ended the draft. But I was already in. I wasn't going to go to the Marines. Vietnam was going on. I didn't want to go to Army. So if I had to kill someone for my country, I wanted to make sure that I did it from far away. You know, press a button and boom, you're gone, buddy.
Yeah, but, I think that's human nature. Yeah, it takes skills to do it up close.
Yeah, you know.
But you kill audiences when you perform.
Well, yeah, you know, I have my nights. I have my nights. I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico this weekend, and four sold out shows at a casino there. And the last show, AIDS kind of caught up to me, and I was distracted. I was, I got letters. People said, "Oh, we loved you, anyways." But basically, I just leveled with the audience. I go, "Look, here's what I'm going through. I'm here promoting this movie. I don't have the money to have ads. I would like for you to call AMC Theaters and let them know that you're going to see it there. When are they going to show it?" And blah, 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 you know. And I spent, I guess, too much of that time for a paying audience preaching to them. I did do some bits, but I feel like that was unfair. They were there for you to laugh, not for you to, use them as publicity props. But I got a letter, just finished reading it, as a matter of fact, saying, "Hey, I really like the way you got personal. You started to talk about your heart, your quadruple bypass, how life is fleeting, how these things." It's, we found that enjoyable. And I said, "Well, I hope you spoke for all 300 people." But nobody walked out. They just listened to me.
Right. And, well, I guess you're at the point where you can pace yourself now, right? So you know what to do, how often, that kind of approach.
Yeah, well, when you do two shows a night, and I'm always cautious that I don't repeat the same joke, I'm going, "Wow, did I do this on the first show or the second show? Did I just do it?" I remember seeing Don Rinkles with Paul Reiser. We went to see Don Rinkles in Vegas, and we sat there, and he did the same joke twice, And us comics, went, and then the audience didn't laugh the second time. And it was one of the things that always had laughed at. And he caught him, so he goes, "Oh, did I do that already? That was for the people that didn't get it the first time, He saved himself. He saved himself. And I'm at that age. My mom lived to be 93, and she was always there. Her mind, she wasn't feeble or anything like that.
Right.
And I hope I have the same luck,
I want to talk a little bit more about Las Vegas with you. And then again, you're going to be at the A-Stars Comedy Show at the Luxury Boutique Hotel. And it's Monday, September 16th at 8 p.m. And they have it billed as because of Mexican Independence Day.
Yes. And I always joke about that. It's Mexican Independence. But independence from what,
I couldn't figure that out either. I thought it was Compton Independence Day. So
it could have been. My parents are funny, especially my father had a great sense of humor. I remember asking him, I said, "All right, now you guys got to vote. Now I got to vote." And my father said, "I better not." He says, "I used to vote in Mexico, and look what a mess I made over there." I think things are being run very good here. I better not mess it up.
You mentioned your parents earlier. Did they ever see you perform in Las Vegas?
No, they didn't. Here's a scoop. I've never really talked about this. I'm not your typical Mexican in the sense that my religion, my folks were a Protestant, which is very rare among Mexican Americans, And now it cost me many of heart. I felt like I was insulting them, because in school I didn't want no trouble, so I had a crucifix that I would wear. Nobody questioned my Catholicism, right? But at home, I would hide that crucifix outside because we're Protestant, And they're very strict Protestant. They were apostolic. The women don't wear makeup. They wear long dresses. We're kind of like the Amish, They don't smoke. They don't drink, that sort of thing. But of course, I've smoked and drank for my whole family,
Of course, yeah.
So I've always lived that. But of course, I've converted since, I consider myself a Catholic, and not that I believe particularly in one religion or the other, but I figured if all Catholics are wrong, this is my logic, and we're all going to hell, I want to be where all the people I recognize are. I want to go with the majority.
Sure.
I want to play the odd.
Plus, when you do something wrong, you can confess and get it out of your system.
Yeah. And every once in a while, I have somebody email me, "Are you the son of so-and-so? And weren't you in this apostolic church?" And I go, "That was my Doppler double."
When you're putting material together, and you talked a little bit about how when you had those four shows and one was more promoting than performing, but when you are performing, are you writing new material, or are you just taking notes about things you mentioned earlier? the little things, the minutiae that get that you find funny. How does that work? Yeah.
Well, I look, part of it is topical, you know, like, for example, when the Ukraine war started, I would do a couple of things for that. I would tell the audience, you know, I don't blame you for not laughing. We're living in some dangerous times. There's a war going on that could possibly lead to a nuclear exchange. And we Hispanics and Blacks were oblivious to that because, I would start talking about that. Is it because, we don't know what a Ukraine is. I mean, to me, it sounds like a rental equipment for cranes. You know, U-Haul, you crazy, you know? And I would say, this is the war between white people and whiter people. So we don't have a dog in this one, you know? And we don't know what they're fighting about, you know? So, and then I would talk about how the Russian leader's name is a profanity in Spanish. You know, his name is Putin, which means little puto, which is a bad word in Spanish, you know? Right. And they crack up over this, you know? So I try to find those things where people go, yeah, I that's right, Putin, right? And then I talk about how the Mexican news, for example, Telemundo and Univision, how they really push sexuality at you in their newscast. You know, these women have plunging cleavages, you know, mm-hmm. and they're all stunningly beautiful, talking about horrible things, you know. There was an accident, and so and so. They show the blood and guts, and you're looking at this woman going, "My God, is this, I don't know if to get an erection or to feel bad for the person that got." But you know, they really. So when I would connect with audiences like that, they go, "Yeah, you know." And even if you don't know Spanish, everybody has been channel surfing, and you stop at a Spanish channel, you go, "My God, that girl is dressed like a brick house." You know, that girl. How do they allow them? So sexuality is a big deal, you know. I a long time ago, Univision, I used to have a talk show for 4 years. I was kind of like the Johnny Carson of Latin America. And I remember with one of the presidents there saying, you know, Paul, if you keep play your cards right and just stay like that, you could be the next Don Francisco. And Don Francisco was like this international show, this man, he would... their comedy is like, I don't know, 40, 50 years politically incorrect. They make fun of midgets. Okay, it's a little slow right now, so let's have the midgets. And for no reason, these midgets run across the screen, and everybody laughs, you know. Okay, you know? So I knew Don Francisco, and I wished him well, but my goal was always to function and be known in America, you know. Here, this is my country.
Absolutely.
I'm not from Mexico, you know, and no. I have no problem telling you that when Mexico plays the United States, I don't have a Mexican flag. You know, I'm the one rooting for America. You know, I guess being in the military made me feel like that. I've never had divided loyalties, you know. And listen, let me mention to you, Ira, that something very important. I made a little independent movie. It took me 2 years. I used a lot of my superstar comedian friends. I got Luis Guzman. I have Danny Trejo. I got Gary Busey. Jay Moore is my co-star in this movie. I have Daisy Duke. She's an older lady. She's good. I just a lot of people. Felipe Esparza. A lot of comedians in this. So I figured, how could I go wrong? The movie's called Holy Cash, and you know, I didn't take it to Netflix. I didn't festival it. I believed in it enough that I went right to the theaters. You know, and it's very very rare that a theater chain will take an independent movie.
Correct.
But by the grace of God, we did that. AMC looked at it for 2 weeks. I was biting my nails, and they called me up and they go, yeah, it's funny. It's a quick story about the two old con men who've been in and out of jail their whole lives. And then they hit on the biggest con of all. They become evangelists. So that, you know, that there's an evangelist there, who's played by this very, very funny actor, Eric Spears. And we did time together. So we go to Reverend School. To make a long story short, I'm very proud of it. AMC thinks it's good. They tested it. They said, yeah, sure, we'll run it. So it'll be playing at AMC theaters. If you're not in one of the cities that is playing, because I'm not getting a wide distribution, hopefully you'll call the theater and go, hey, we'd like to see it too. It works on a lot of levels, and I want to thank you for this time. I'm proud of this picture. I think in the last 10 years, AMC told me that they've only accepted maybe 4, 5, 6 independent pictures, so I'm in good company.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been comedian Paul Rodriguez. He's headlining in the A-Stars comedy show at the Ahern Luxury Boutique Hotel. It's Monday, September 16th at 8 p.m. And for ticket information, go to ahernhotel.com. For everything about Paul Rodriguez, you can follow him on Instagram. And Paul, thanks for being on the show.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time and let me borrow in some of your airspace. And yeah, the Ahern Hotel, you know, I played all of them, but I haven't played this one. You know, some people have a big deal. Oh, it's not on the main strip. I don't care. People don't go see buildings. They go see comedians. I hope whoever's listening to me will come on by and I'll make you laugh.
Good way to end it. See you next time.
Thank you, boss.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Yeah,